Our view glides across water, then up the skyline of Midtown New York. The lights of the city twinkle, then dissolve into a title. 20th Anniversary Miramax Films. Titles appear. Miramax Films presents A Film Colony Production, a film by Lasse Hallström, starring Tobey Maguire as Homer Wells, Charlize Theron as Candy Kendall, Delroy Lindo as Mr. Rose, Paul Rudd as Wally Worthington, and Michael Caine as Dr. Wilbur Larch. Now, a steel gray locomotive stops at a remote country station. Beside the snow-spotted tracks, a solitary man waits in a muddy lot. On the engine car, yellow letters read Bangor and Aroostook below a bin of coal. As we glide over the engine's long snout, a slender pipe shoots out billows of steam. Also starring Kathy Baker, Kieran Culkin, Kate Nelligan, Heavy D, K. Todd Freeman, Paz de la Huerta, and introducing Erica Badu. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Read by Lynn McLean. The train pulls slowly away, then gains speed as the narrow windows of three passenger cars pass our view. In the lot, the man points a couple to a nearby hilltop where the gables of a manor house part the forest. The couple starts off past a shuttered warehouse set against the tracks. A title appears, The Cider House Rules.
In other parts of the world, young men leave home and travel far and wide in search of a promising future. Their journeys are often fueled by dreams of triumphing over evil, finding a great love, or the hope of fortunes easily made. Here in St. Cloud's, not even the decision to get off the train is easily made, for it requires an earlier, more difficult decision. Add a child to your life or leave one behind. The only reason people journey here is for the orphanage.
Good morning.
Hello, we have an appointment.
Yes, come in. Welcome to St. Cloud's. We're going right upstairs to see Dr. March.
I came as a physician to the abandoned children and unhappily pregnant women. I had hoped to become a hero, but in St. Cloud's, there was no such position. In the lonely, sordid world of lost children, there were no heroes to be found. And so I became the caretaker of many, father of none. Well, in a way, there was one.
Here he is.
His name was Homer Wells.
Larch sits with the couple.
I named him after the Greek writer. You know Homer, of course.
Of course, yes.
And I made his name Wells because I could tell he was very deep.
In truth, Nurse Angela named him. Her father drilled Wells, and she once owned a cat named Homer.
Bye-bye, Homer.
At night, Larch puts the boys to bed. Downstairs, the couple returns.
Good night, you princes of Maine.
Can we see the doctor?
You kings of New England.
Doctor? Doctor? There's something wrong with him. He never makes a sound.
He didn't cry. Orphan babies learn there's no point in it.
Do you think we could have a look at someone a little different?
The woman hands Homer to Dr. Larch. Smiling, he cradles the plump-cheeked baby.
Thus was Homer Wells returned. He was too happy a baby.
Bye, Homer.
The second family to adopt him had a gift for getting sounds out of Homer. They beat him. He couldn't stop crying.
At the second house, Dr. Larch plucks Homer out of his crib and carries him back to the orphanage.
Here in St. Cloud's, I try to consider, with each rule I make or break, that my first priority is an orphan's future. Twice adopted, twice returned. It didn't bode well.
6-year-old Homer listens through a stethoscope to a woman's belly.
And yet, it was always clear to me that he was a special boy.
A teenaged Homer daydreams.
And
it was with Homer's future in mind.
Homer.
That I began his tutorials.
If you're going to stay at St. Cloud's, I expect you to be of use.
I admit that our lessons were, in part, the simple expression of a father's love.
Homer.
But in failing to withhold love, in making the orphanage his home,
Had I created a true and everlasting orphan?
Homer helps a woman through labor.
Keep breathing. You're gonna be okay.
And so my excellent pupil learned to look after abandoned children and to deliver unwanted babies.
Relax.
Long ago, I had decided that sometimes it was the women who needed to be delivered.
As Larch performs a procedure, a nurse closes the door on Homer. Later, Homer carries a pot to an outdoor incinerator.
I chose my own path. No one would ever choose for Homer Wells.
Homer takes the lid from the pot and peers inside. Frowning, he replaces the lid and shifts his gaze to the fire. Now, a record spins on a phonograph. Words appear. St. Cloud's, Maine, March 1943.
I saw the splendor of the moonlight on Honolulu Bay.
In a nearby bed, Dr. Larch lies prone, holding a mask over his nose and mouth. He tips a vial of ether over the mask. As he inhales deeply, his hands fall limply away from his face. Now our view moves past an enclosed shelving unit filled with bottles of different shapes and sizes. On the other side of a sheer curtain, Dr. Larch pours more ether onto the mask. Homer sees his mentor lying with his eyes closed and turns back toward the door. At the threshold, he stops and faces the room.
Dr. Larch!
The doctor's eyes open.
Dr. Larch!
As Homer steps inside, Larch sets the ether and mask on a bedside table.
Dr. Larch!
He sits up on the edge of the bed.
We have two new patients, one to deliver.
Coming.
First pregnancy?
Yes, for both.
I presume you'd prefer handling the delivery?
All I said was, I don't want to perform abortions. I have no argument with you performing them.
You know how to help these women. How can you not feel obligated to help them when they can't get help anywhere else?
One, it's illegal. Two, I didn't ask how to do it, you just showed me.
What else could I have shown you, Homer? The only thing I can teach you is what I know. In any life, you have to be of use.
Of use?
Later, Homer checks a new mother.
I don't want to see it.
You don't have to see it, dear. Don't worry.
I don't even want to know what sex it is, so don't tell me.
We won't tell you. You're going to be okay.
And your baby's going to be okay, too.
I don't want to know.
Larch enters.
That's a big boy.
Let me see him. I want to see him.
The doctor faces Homer.
Would you mind joining me in the nursery?
Okay.
Now Homer and Larch check on babies in a row of bassinets.
Wilbur. The adopting couple is waiting in your office.
Life is waiting. Let them wait.
Where's the name sheet?
Nobody's named this one yet.
Oh, it's my turn. Henceforth, you shall be Little Dorrit.
Ooh. No, you don't like that, do you? He's a boy, that's why.
Can a boy be a Dorrit?
I don't think so.
You do it.
Homer and Larch trade places.
Henceforth, you shall be Little Wilbur.
Homer taps the baby's forehead.
I'm not crazy about the little.
Okay, just Wilbur then.
We haven't had a Wilbur in a year or so, have we?
Outside, a boy follows Homer to the incinerator.
He sniffs that ether. I've seen him do it.
It's because he's too tired to sleep. He has to.
He smells like he can put you to sleep.
He's a doctor, Buster. Doctors smell like ether.
You're a doctor, Homer. You don't smell like
either. I'm not a doctor. I haven't been to medical school. I haven't even been to high school.
Yeah, well, you studied with the old man for years.
I'm not a doctor.
Buster lowers his head.
Sorry, Homer.
Nighttime. A scrawny little boy coughs into a phonograph's horn.
Fuzzy's not uncommon. Johnny, there's something about the premature babies of alcoholic mothers. They seem to be susceptible to every damn thing that comes along.
I haven't read that.
I haven't either, but you will. Those morons who write the books ought to do some research here. Come on, Fuzz.
Dr. Larch lifts Fuzzy.
Here we go. Feet up. There you are.
Larch sits Fuzzy in a bed, and Homer covers the sickly boy in a round plastic tent. Fuzzy sniffs.
Wilbur, can you come out here, please?
As Dr. Larch leaves, a teenage girl stands close to Homer.
Hi, Homer.
Hey, what is it, Mary Agnes?
She sticks out her tongue.
Now calm down.
What is it?
Look.
Oh, did you bite it? Did you bite your tongue?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it looks like you bit it. You'll be fine.
Well, maybe I was kissing someone and he bit me.
Oh, I think you bit it. Maybe in your sleep. Story time, Fuzzy.
Oh, Lord.
Later in the girls' dorm, Nurse Edna leads prayer.
Until the shadows lengthen and the evening comes, and the busy world is hushed, and the fever of life is over, and our work is done.
Outside, the mother leaves with her suitcase, still sobbing.
A safe lodging, and a holy rest, and peace at the last. Amen.
In the boys' dorm, Dr. Larch reads,
which had lain concealed till now, ran backwards and forwards on the parapet with a dismal howl, and collecting himself for a spring, jumped the dead man's shoulders. Missing his aim, he fell into a ditch, turning completely over as he went, and striking his head against a stone, dashed out his brains.
In his tent, Fuzzy holds his head.
That is the end of the chapter.
Dr. Larch looks around at the boys lying in their rows of beds, then stands.
That's it. Till tomorrow.
Crossing the long, narrow room, he reaches the door and turns off the lights.
Good night, you princes of Maine. You kings of New England.
As Homer settles into bed, one of the boys jumps in beside him.
Oh. John? You all right?
Fuzzy peeks out from his breathing hood.
Why does Dr. Larch say that every night?
Maybe to scare us.
Jerk. Dr. Larch loves us.
But why does he do that?
Does it because we like it.
Do you like it, Curly?
Yeah.
I like it, too.
Daytime. Outside, the girls make snowballs.
You two get Copperfield and Curly. Buster's mine. And remember, nobody touches Fuzzy.
On a hill, the boys throw first. The girls bombard them as the boys rush down. Buster charges Mary Agnes. Fuzzy runs around holding his snowball. He falls. Mary Agnes sees Homer walking up to the house. She pelts him on the arm, then sticks out her tongue. Nurse Edna hurries out in her white uniform.
What do you think you're doing?
Children, no fighting. Share the snowball.
She hurries across the yard to Fuzzy, sitting on the snow.
Fuzzy, listen to you. You've been running.
A car arrives at the side of the house where repair scaffolding stands against the brick walls. A middle-aged couple gets out. The kids immediately stop and brush themselves off.
Get over here!
The husband smiles at the yard full of children. Little Curly takes off his cap and smooths down his light brown hair. Mary Agnes squints.
I know the type. They'll take one of the babies.
Later, the children eat pancakes at a long dining table. One boy plasters on a big grin as Nurse Edna walks past with the visitors.
Mary Agnes?
The teenage girl coaxes a baby to eat. Ignoring her, the baby grabs Fuzzy's neck.
Go on.
Fuzzy?
Pale Fuzzy slurps his milk.
Curly.
Curly expertly cuts his pancakes with a knife. The couple moves on to a jug-eared boy.
John?
Beside him sits a 6-year-old blonde girl with big blue eyes.
Hazel?
Smiling, she shyly waves a finger. The couple gazes fondly at her, then at each other. Later, Hazel waves from the front yard. Carrying a suitcase, she follows the visitors to their car. Two of her friends watch her through a window. Nurse Edna blows a kiss. At another window, Curly rests his chin on his hands and blinks sadly. Homer sits down beside him.
They wanted a girl, Curly.
Nobody ever wants me.
Oh, hey. Hey, come on. Come here. You know, you're one of the best, Curly. And we wouldn't let just anyone take you.
Dr. Larch wouldn't let just anyone take any of us.
Well, that's true.
Nobody's asked for me, have they?
Nobody special enough, Curly.
You mean somebody has?
Only the right people can have you. Well, what do you say we go and pack your suitcase? It's movie night tonight, Curly.
Okay.
Later in the darkened dining hall, King Kong plays on a movie screen. The The kids watch with wide eyes, and Homer gapes as Kong beats the life out of a dinosaur. In the back of the room, beside the movie projector, Nurse Angela hands Dr. Larch a letter. In the movie, Kong picks up a beautiful woman in his colossal hand. Fuzzy points at the screen.
Look, Kong thinks she's his mother. He thinks she's his mother.
He doesn't think she's his mother, Fuzzy.
He does, so he loves her.
That's why he holds her.
Behind him, Buster smiles tenderly.
Fuzzy, how can she be his mother?
He just thinks she is.
On the screen, Kong's captive stirs. Dr. Larch holds the letter.
They want to replace me. The Board of Trustees wants to replace me.
They just want you to hire some new help.
We don't need any new help. Some new things would be useful.
The movie screen turns white.
Homer, I need you.
Mary Agnes follows Homer to the movie projector.
Not you taking care of this. Always breaks in the same place. It's your splice, isn't it?
No, it is your splice. You blame me for everything.
Angela, we need a new movie, a new projector, a new typewriter. That's what needs replacing around here.
Wilbur, we have a delivery.
Homer, would you get this one?
She's a patient, right? She should see a doctor.
Homer, you are a skilled and gifted surgeon with near-perfect obstetrical and gynecological procedure.
I just mean that I'd rather fix the movie tonight.
Okay, sure. You splice. I'll deliver.
Mary Agnes leans on the table and watches Homer work. Later, Homer carries Fuzzy through the boys' dorm.
Come on, Fuzz. Let's go. Let's go. Come on.
He puts Fuzzy into bed.
Homer, doesn't King Kong think the woman is his mother?
That's right, Fuzz. That's what Kong thinks.
That's why Kong loves her.
It's your turn. I'll get this.
Okay.
Dr. Larch hands Homer a book.
Story time.
Dr. Larch puts Fuzzy under the breathing tent.
The Personal History of David Copperfield, Chapter 1, I Am Born. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. I was a posthumous child. My father's eyes had closed upon the light of this world 6 months when mine opened on it. To begin my life...
His father's dead, right?
That's right, Fuzz.
Is your father dead?
Cirrhosis. It's a disease of the liver.
What? A liver killed him?
No, alcohol killed him. He drank himself to death.
But did you know him?
Oh, barely. But it hardly mattered that I knew him.
Did you know your mother better?
She's dead now, too. She was a nanny.
What's a nanny do?
She looks after other people's children.
Did she grow up around here?
No, she was an immigrant.
What's an immigrant?
Someone not from Maine.
In their dorm, the girls gather around Nurse Edna.
Let us be happy for Hazel. Hazel has found a family. Good night, Hazel.
Good night.
At the train station, Homer and Buster watch Mary Agnes flirt with a train car full of GIs.
Hi.
Hey, okay, Eddie, what'd you say?
Homer, do you ever think about trying to find your parents?
Not really.
Why not?
Well, they never did the things parents are supposed to do. Dr. Larch did those things, and Nurse Edna and Nurse Angela.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could meet mine anyway, sometimes.
What for?
Well, like to show them that I could cook a little.
Mm-hmm.
And that I could drive a truck.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I want to meet them so I can kill them. Just so I can kill them.
Homer watches him with a flat gaze.
You know I never kill anyone, right?
Mm-hmm, I know.
Get away!
Mary Agnes slaps a GI's hand.
Get away from me!
I think Mary Agnes could kill someone.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
I don't think so. No, she's... She's just an emotional girl.
What's she so emotional about?
She got left here like the rest of us, didn't she?
At the orphanage, the incinerator's tall chimney blows smoke as the children play. One of the kids tosses a ball, which bounces off toward the incinerator. A boy, Copperfield, runs after it. Picking up the ball, he notices a teenage girl huddled against the incinerator's brick base. In the operating room.
Temperature's 104.
The girl, about 13 years old, squirms on the examining table.
That's good. A little more.
Dear child, it won't hurt when I look. I'm just gonna look.
Nurse Edna holds the girl's knees apart with one hand and strokes her cheek with the other. Crouching, Dr. Larch looks between her legs, then slowly rises.
Dear child, did you do something to yourself?
It wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Did you go to someone else?
He said he was a doctor. I would have never stuck that inside me.
Listen.
It wasn't me.
Listen, you've been very brave, and I'm going to put you to sleep.
It wasn't me.
Homer, I want you to see this.
Homer takes a look.
You won't feel it anymore.
He gets out the ether.
You've been very brave. We'll make it deep.
You sure?
You bet. Fetus is unexpelled. The uterus is punctured. She has acute peritonitis. There is a foreign object. I think it's a crochet hook.
Homer gasps and steps aside.
Take this.
Dr. Larch joins him.
If she had come to you 4 months ago and asked for a simple DNC, what would you have done? Nothing. This is what doing nothing gets you. It means that somebody else is going to do the job. Some moron who doesn't know how.
Homer takes a breath and strides out.
You should come to me, dear child.
Homer paces in the hallway outside the operating room. He whips off his mask and cap. Later, in a cemetery, Homer and Buster dig a grave.
When did she die of?
She died of secrecy. She died of ignorance.
Oh.
Homer, if you expect people to be responsible for their children, you have to give them the right to decide whether or not to have children. Wouldn't you agree?
How about expecting people to be responsible enough to control themselves to begin with?
How about this child? You expect her to be responsible?
I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about adults. You know who I mean.
Later, Buster drives Homer and Dr. Larch.
What?
It's just a marvel to me that you still have such high expectations of people.
I'm happy I amuse you.
Look at it this way. What choice does Buster have? One of his options. Nobody will ever adopt him.
Look at it this way. Buster and I are sitting here right beside you. We could have ended up in the incinerator.
Happy to be alive under any circumstances. Is that your point?
Buster skids around a corner. Dr. Larch and Homer raise their eyebrows at him.
Happy to be alive? Yeah, I guess so.
A shiny convertible drives up beside them. As it passes, a ruby-lipped blonde smiles at Homer from the passenger seat. The bullet gray Studebaker, driven by a handsome young GI, pulls up to the orphanage.
Children, are they all orphans?
Oh, it is an orphanage.
The kids clamor all over the car.
Hi. Okay, we're getting in the car.
Curly rushes over to the woman.
Hi.
Sure.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm the best.
You are?
Wow. The best of what?
I'm the best one.
The best one, huh?
I'm the best one of all the kids.
You are?
Seems like the best one.
Buster pulls into the driveway as the pretty young woman kneels beside Curly. She wipes his nose.
Curly, I'm the best. They're just a fool.
Sorry, they're not used to seeing a car like this.
It's okay. I don't mind.
Oh, sure you can. Come on.
Good morning.
Sure.
Morning.
Dr. Larch.
Candy.
Hi, I'm Wally. Hi, we brought some chocolates for the kids.
Chocolates.
Yeah. How
thought.
Come on, Curly.
Inside, the couple sits in the office with Homer.
So, Mrs.
Candy. Candy Kendall.
Wally Worthington.
They shake hands. As Homer jots down notes, Candy glances at Wally, who shifts uncomfortably in his seat. Candy nods covertly toward the young Homer.
How many months are you?
Candy and Wally turn to each other warily, then rest their uncertain gaze on Homer.
Are you doing the... Oh, no, Dr. Larch will be performing the procedure.
Oh, good. Okay. I was just curious.
Excuse me, the woman you delivered last night, she's complaining of pain.
Oh, okay. I'll take a look, couple minutes. Thank you.
The young couple watches Nurse Edna leave, and then they look to Homer. Later, Homer walks down the hall and sees Wally and Scrubs trying to open a window.
You okay?
Yeah. I think it was the ether. The smell must have got to me. Oh, God. This is all my fault.
Homer, Steerforth got into the pantry. He's eaten all the pie dough.
He wasn't sharing it either.
Down the hall, throwing up.
Wally takes a few wary steps and then leans against the wall. Pausing, he shares a smile with Homer.
What kind of planes you flying?
B-24 Liberator.
Well, Liberator.
You enlisted?
They wouldn't take me. I'm class 4. I have a heart defect.
Yeah? Is it serious?
No, it's not serious. I'm just not supposed to get excited, you know, no strain, no stress. I try to keep calm all the time.
I can't imagine there's any strain or stress around here.
Yeah.
The door beside Wally opens. Nurse Angela and Dr. Larch wheel Candy out on a gurney.
How's she doing?
Just fine.
Good.
Candy opens her eyes.
Oh, yeah, girl.
It's all over.
Yeah, it's all over.
Homer lags behind, watching as Dr. Larch, Nurse Angela, and Wally move Candy down the hall.
I would really like a baby one day. I really would.
Why, of course. You can have as many children as you want. I'm sure you'll have very beautiful children.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
He pulls a curtain around her.
You'll have princes of Maine. You'll have kings of New England. Lieutenant, I think you should find yourself some fresh air.
Dr. Larch leaves Wally standing alone in the long, empty hallway. Later in the infirmary, Homer wipes up the floor, then goes over to Fuzzy. Nearby, Steerforth holds his stomach.
Don't feel so good.
Watch out!
Homer, what's a runt? Copperfield called me a runt.
We're just kidding, Fuzz.
Orange is my favorite color. Should I keep the teeth orange?
Homer looks out the window at Wally. In his tent, Fuzzy holds up a drawing of a pumpkin.
Homer, look. Homer, what is Halloween?
It's at the end of October.
Is that soon?
That's a few months away, Fuzz.
It's the best. Time. Homer, what is Honolulu?
Honolulu? It's a city.
What's the moonlight like?
Well, I've never been there, but I think that it would probably be very bright.
Why do we get pumpkins only once a year?
Don't get too excited, Fuzzy.
Steerforth clutches his stomach. Heaving, he bolts into the hallway. Homer goes back to the window. He gazes down at Wally. In the window's reflection, he paces beside his car. Later, Homer opens the heavy front door of the orphanage. He steps out onto the front porch and pauses. Taking a deep breath, he walks down the front steps toward Wally, who stares off into the woods.
Hey.
Hey. How's she doing?
Oh, she's fine.
Good.
Fine. Yeah. I was wondering if you could give me a ride.
Sure. I'd be glad to. Ride where?
Where are you going?
We're heading back to Cape Kenneth.
Cape Kenneth. That sounds fine.
Okay.
Inside, Homer races up three flights of stairs. At the top of the landing, he comes face to face with Dr. Larch in his office.
Doubtless you will let me know what immensely worthwhile, or at least useful thing that it is you find to do.
I wasn't intending to leave here to be entirely useless. I expect I'll find some other way to be of use.
In other parts of the world, I suppose there are other ways.
Of course.
Are you so stupid you imagine you're going to find a more gratifying life? What you will find is people like the poor people who get left here, only nobody takes care of them half as well. And you won't be able to take care of them either. There's no taking care of anybody. Not out there.
You know I'm grateful for everything that you've done for me.
I don't need your gratitude.
I don't need this. I know all about my condition.
It's your heart. You ought to take it with you.
Homer looks down at the x-ray, then tucks it in a folder. Later, the nurses prepare lunch.
Going where? Does he have a plan of some kind?
Will he be back soon?
I don't know. He's just leaving. You were the one who says he needs to see the world. That's what he'll do, is see the world.
He's leaving. He'll need clothes. He'll need some money.
I didn't try to make some money. That's part of seeing the world, isn't it?
Oh, Wilbur, stop it. You knew this was going to happen. He's a young man.
He's still a boy. Out in the world. Still a boy.
Just find him some clothes, Wilbur. He could use some clothes.
Nurse Angela leaves Larch by himself. A void stare hangs on his careworn face and his lips crease tightly. Later, a red-haired girl and Nurse Edna step out onto the porch. Mary Agnes follows, leans on the railing, and watches Homer sullenly. Homer puts a suitcase in the trunk of Wally's car. Around the front, Copperfield kicks the fender. Nurse Angela turns to Homer.
Homer.
Sharing a tender smile, they hug. Nurse Edna ushers Copperfield away.
It'll be all right. Children, up on the porch.
Nurse Angela holds Homer's cheeks.
Wave from here.
A little girl reaches up and grips Homer's arms, and he lifts her for a hug.
Bye. Bye, Homer.
Bye.
Dr. Larch peeks down from his office window, watching Homer hug two more little girls.
Bye, Homer.
Dr. Larch turns away.
Come on.
2 5-year-olds with messy hair frown on the porch. Mary Agnes storms inside. Hidden behind a tree, Buster glances back at the parked car. He pulls out a pocket knife and whittles a stick. Now, Wally carries candy to the car.
I can walk. Put me down.
No, I want to carry you.
No, it's okay.
As Homer opens the door, Wally puts candy down. She leans on the car.
Okay.
She gives Homer a smile and climbs into the back seat.
Coming with us? That's good. Never know when you're gonna need a doctor.
Do you want to put the top up?
No.
Might get cold.
I want some fresh air.
Candy lies down. Homer sits with a sigh in the front seat, and Wally shuts the car door.
She'll be just fine.
Homer looks to Nurse Edna.
Is he gonna come out?
She shakes her head. Homer nods faintly, and Edna kisses his forehead. Now, Curly hoists himself up on the car door.
Bye, Homer.
Bye, Curly. Sorry I have to go.
It's not fair. You're too old.
The boy blinks at Homer, his tiny hands hooked over the door. Edna helps Curly get down.
I couldn't find Buster. Maybe you could tell him that,
Edna touches his cheek. Indoors, by a window, Fuzzy watches from his breathing tent. Outside, Buster keeps whittling as the car pulls away.
Don't go too far!
Bye.
A few kids run after it. Speeds away on a dirt road leading to distant hills. Dust trails in the car's wake. At the road's edge on either side, two saplings with orange leaves stand like gateposts to the horizon. Later, on a forest road, reflections of trees stream across the car's windshield. Homer smiles faintly and lifts a hand into the wind.
Let us be happy for Homer Wells. Homer has found a family. Aren't we all happy for Homer?
Yes.
Good night, Homer.
Good night, Homer.
In the girls' bathroom, Mary Agnes scowls into a mirror.
Good night, Homer.
She slaps herself. She frowns at her likeness in the dirty glass, then hides her face in her hands. In his bed, Dr. Larch's chest rises and falls. His drooping eyes focus on the ether mask at his bedside. His right arm reaches mechanically for it, and he covers his mouth and nose. In his other hand, the ether vial tips and droplets of clear liquid disappear into the mask. The mask falls away and he sleeps. Now, under a sky of blue and pink, the convertible rolls by with its round headlights glowing. Nighttime. Shadows cross Homer's moonlit face. Candy's hair stirs in the wind.
Actually, the Army's given me leave twice. First when my father died, now I'm on leave to help my mom with the harvest. She's no farmer. Apples were my dad's business, but the war on, she's short of pickers.
Wally thinks apples are boring.
I never said they were boring.
Yes, you did. You said apples weren't exactly fine.
They aren't.
I think I would like the apple business.
You're a little overqualified, aren't you?
No, not really. I need a job.
Where are you headed?
I don't know.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Is your family in the apple business too, Candy?
No. But I work there. I like it. My dad's a lobsterman.
Oh, wow.
Homer smiles with wonder.
I've never actually seen a lobster.
Are you serious?
Never seen the ocean either.
You've never seen the ocean? That's not funny, that's serious.
A shy smile spreads above Homer's dimpled chin. The car winds into the darkness. Morning. In the parked convertible, sunlight glares on Homer's sleeping face. He stirs awake and finds himself alone. He leaves the car. Tall grass rustles on a bluff before him. Climbing the rise, he sees the broad blue ocean and the tiny silhouettes of Wally and Candy on the beach. Squinting, Homer moves closer. Wally lazily throws stones into the water. Candy sits nearby, wrapped in a blanket. Homer stops beside her.
It's beautiful.
He looks down at Candy, wrapped and curled up.
Do you have cramps?
She nods hesitantly.
Lily's up soon. As long as the bleeding isn't heavy, it's normal. Should taper off tomorrow.
A football bounces off Homer's
Dad!
Gut.
All right.
Throw back.
Okay.
Wally catches Homer's wobbly pass.
All right.
Put your fingers on the laces.
Later, Wally draws in the sand.
Here's China. Here's India.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 7-hour round-trip flight. It's called the Burma Run. Uh-huh. And this part's called flying over the hump. These are the Himalayas.
How high do you fly there?
Well, I have to fly 15,000 feet within the first 35 minutes. Otherwise, I won't make it over the first mountain.
Behind them, Candy listens, lying under her blanket, her gaze distant and still.
Yeah, actually, I volunteered.
Did you really?
Hey, look, if you're serious about wanting a job, picking apples isn't that boring.
Yeah? Oh, I would love that, Wally.
Later, along the harbor of a fishing village, Wally carries Candy's bags to the docks.
See you around, Homer.
Oh, yeah.
They shake hands.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For everything.
She smiles at Homer and heads downstairs to the dock. Homer gets into the convertible.
Hi, Sam.
Down on the dock, Candy waves to a motoring fisherman.
Hi, Dad.
Homer watches Candy and Wally kiss. His gaze grows thoughtful. Later, Wally's convertible turns down a wooded drive in the country. The car stops in front of a large colonial-style house. As Homer gazes serenely at it, Wally nudges him with his elbow.
Come on, I'm gonna meet my mom.
They get out and stride toward the front door.
By the way, you've been at a wedding, right? It comes up. That's where I met you, at the wedding.
This is Homer Wells.
Later.
How do you do, Homer?
Oh, good. How do you do?
He's the most overqualified apple picker you'll ever meet, but he's dying to learn the business.
Really? Were you a friend of the groom's, Homer?
Well, he's almost a friend of the groom's, the bride's.
Everyone, come on.
In that case, maybe you'd like to stay to dinner, Homer.
Another time, Mom. Come on, you gotta meet Mr. Rose.
Ah! You're using my soap, man.
I ain't using no soap.
Now, at an outdoor shower, two lean black men wash near a long bunkhouse with a peaked roof. Its wood siding is gray with age and streaked with fading white paint. Nearby, Homer and Wally arrive in an old pickup.
They're migrants. Yeah, they pick the fruit. All kinds. They travel up and down the coast with the seasons.
The trick to Mr. Rose is you have to let him be boss.
A young woman emptying a bucket just misses them.
That thing's backed up again, Wally.
Oh, no.
I thought you said you was going to get us a plumber.
Rose, this is Homer. Homer, this is Mr. Rose's daughter, Rose.
You a plumber?
Now, Homer's a new picker. He's going to stay here with you.
The two lean workers, Muddy and Jack, trade glances with Rose.
He's staying here?
Yeah.
A tall mustache man steps behind her.
This daughter of mine, she's just Miss Hospitality, ain't she, Wally?
Deep crow's feet wrinkle Mr. Rose's cheeks.
New pick? Well, you got lots of experience, I expect.
Homer's got no experience, Arthur, but he's smarter than I am. He's a fast learner. Look, Mr. Rose is going to teach you the apple business.
Well, I believe this is history. We are making history, Wally, ain't we? We're making history having this young man stay with us.
He shakes Homer's hand.
Why don't you show him around?
Nighttime. Inside the bunkhouse, Muddy sits on his bed sharpening a knife, watching Homer unpack. Rose picks up one of Homer's books.
Your name is Rose Rose?
Pretty, ain't
you? Very. You like to read?
I really can't read it.
Two stout pickers, Peaches and Hero, look up from a card game. Rose opens the book.
Homer, what does this say? Here.
She points to a page. Rose blinks attentively as Homer takes the book.
I looked at the stars and considered how awful it would be for a man to turn his face to them as he froze to death and see no help or pity in all the glittering multitude.
All the pickers listen.
More.
Since you're the one who's smart enough to read, what's this here?
Tall and muscular, Jack points to the wall near his bed. Homer steps over for a look. He finds a small piece of paper.
So, a list of rules, it seems.
Whose rules?
I imagine they fussed, I suppose. Go on in. Read them home.
One, please don't smoke in bed.
Jack and the others all let out puffs of smoke.
It's too late for that one. Keep reading home.
Two, please don't operate the grinder or press if you've been drinking.
You know they ain't our rules, Homer.
Mr. Rose.
We didn't write them. I don't see no need to read them.
Okay.
Later, Homer lies in bed with his hands folded on his chest over a book.
Good night, you princes of Maine, you kings of New England.
At St. Cloud's, Dr. Larch looks across the boys' dorm, then pulls the door shut. In his bed, he rests his head on his own pillow and stares somberly. In the bunkhouse, Homer shuts his eyes. Daytime. A grove of apple trees grows beside a bright autumn forest. In an open-top pickup, Wally drives Homer down a narrow row of trees.
Remember this! In the morning, when the grass is wet!
Homer holds onto the dashboard.
Feel it?
Tree branches whip by.
Almost like flies.
Later, the truck skids to a halt by the cider house. Homer looks up with a dazed grin. Candy stands nearby, wearing her hair in two braided pigtails. She bites into an apple.
Hey, Homer.
Hey. I was just showing Homer the orchard. Kind of a geography lesson.
Really? What's that?
A branch sticks in the grill.
Oh, right here. It looks like you've been giving him flying lessons.
Oh, he loved it. You, didn't you?
Wally hears things people like being whacked by branches.
Oh, I liked it.
Wally smirks at Candy.
Really?
Yeah.
She gazes into Wally's eyes, shaking her head.
Unbelievable.
Well, thank you very much.
Wally wraps his arms around her and gives Homer the A-OK sign. Later, all three walk across a field overlooking low, hazy mountains. The rounded peaks fade from gold to dark green. Autumn leaves flutter down all around them. Later, Homer struggles with a crate of apples and spills some.
Hey! What's wrong with you?
Sorry.
A gaunt old man scowls at him.
It's Vernon. You better stay away from here until he gets to know you better. Then you best stay away from him even more.
Homer!
Wally approaches in uniform.
Lieutenant's calling. You better watch it, Homer.
Hey, Wally. You getting along okay?
Yeah.
Guess what?
What?
I'm shipping out today. It's a little sooner than I expected, but I wanted to make sure that you're settled and happy enough. Considering. Are you bored stiff, or do you think you can stick it out a bit?
Yeah, of course. I'm grateful for the job, Wally.
I'm grateful, too. It gives me some peace of mind knowing you're here keeping an eye on things.
Oh, that's good.
Ready, Homer?
Yeah.
Look, Wally, thanks. I'm lucky I met you.
I'm the lucky one.
No, really, I'm lucky, Wally.
Hey, look, do you want to fight about it?
Homer stares.
Kidding.
Oh, okay.
Take care of yourself.
Okay. Bye.
He takes his place on a wagon.
Okay, Mr. Rose.
As the tractor pulls away, Wally waves from the loading dock. Homer and the others give a casual wave back. In the sunny orchard, Muddy and Peaches carry wide wooden ladders. Rose descends from a tree, carefully backing down a ladder, a full picking bucket harnessed to her front. At another tree, she squats to empty the apples into a crate. Up in the leaves overhead, Mr. Rose and Homer stand on ladders leaned into the branches.
Hey, that's good. Right now you're picking mostly side apples. See, all these drops here, they good only for side. Plus you're picking the apple with the stem only half the time. Golden rule, Homer, you want to pick the apple with the stem. Now, see that there? The spur right above the stem? That right there is the bud for next year's apple. That's called the spur. Pick the spur, you're picking 2 years in one. You're picking next year's apple before it have a chance to grow. So you want to leave that on the branch, yeah?
Okay.
All right, let me see your work.
Homer twists red gold apples from a branch.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's much better. That's better. I can see you got yourself some education. Them good hands you got. Ah, them hands you got, they know what they're doing. Ain't that right?
I guess so.
All right. You keep on working, Homer. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Wilbur! Wilbur?
At St. Cloud's.
Wilbur, you should read this. It's from the board. Another letter. Merely suggesting that some new blood might benefit you all. Someone with new ideas in the obstetrical and pediatric fields. I think they're just testing some ideas for our next meeting.
Dr. Hull seems nice. I think he only wants to help.
He's a psychiatrist. Of course he wants to help. He'd be happy to help the commitment.
If this Mrs. Goodall, you have to be careful of, Wilbur.
We have to be more than careful of Mrs. Goodall. She has enough Christian zeal to start her own country. I'd like to give her a little ether.
So what are you going to do?
Take this.
He hands Edna a sheet of paper.
Homer Wells, born Portland, Maine, March the 2nd, 1915.
Homer was born here in, what was it, 1922?
Graduated Bowdoin College, 1935. Harvard School of Medicine, 1939.
That's you, Wilbur. You went there.
An internship and 2 years of training. Boston Lying In. South End Branch. He was judged an accomplished gynecological and obstetrical surgeon.
That's not him.
With experience in pediatric care.
Wilbur, you're making this up.
Angela, the board is going to replace me. That is what the new blood is for.
You mean they're going to replace you with someone who doesn't perform abortions?
Well, we can only guess at that. They are against the law.
These credentials are against the law, Wilbur.
We all know that I trained Homer, so his credentials are as good as mine are. And don't be holy to me about the law. What has the law ever done for anyone here? So, what do you think about my candidate?
What about school records? Homer doesn't have any diplomas.
Come here, Edna. Please.
Wilbur lifts a finely hand-scripted certificate bearing Homer's name off his X-ray light board.
He will have them.
His own diploma lies beneath.
Oh, Wilbur. I don't know.
Wilbur grins at his handiwork. At the cider house, Mr. Rose joins Wally's mother as she watches the picker stack crates.
What do you think we do?
All aboard, Miss Worden.
Thank you, Arthur.
I got you, buddy.
How's his crew this year? Got any rotten apples?
Ah, good crew, man. Rose, you trying to break my finger?
Jack, the tall, muscular picker, strides away.
Well, maybe we got one bad apple, but it's nothing we can't handle.
Candy walks over.
How's young Homer working?
Good. He's a smart young man.
Hey, Homer.
Wally was right about him.
Real good. Hard worker.
Morning, Miss Worthington. Rose, why don't you come up and visit me at the house? I know I've got some clothes that might fit you.
Okay. I'm sure I can find a ton of things to fit you.
Well, Rose don't really need any more picking clothes, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Now, don't be a party pooper, Arthur.
The girls join Homer, who stacks empty apple crates.
Thank you.
Hey, Rose. Rose.
Mama.
Hey.
Hi. How you feeling?
When I'm not thinking of Wally, I'm fine. Not really good at being alone.
Homer frowns slightly and keeps working.
Oh. Feeling much better. Thanks.
He smiles and nods to himself as he gets more crates.
Hey, listen. Maybe if you're free, you'd like to come and have dinner at my dad's place?
Hidden behind the crates, Homer takes a breath.
Okay. You haven't seen a lobster yet, have you?
No.
Oh, good.
Homer steps out of the way of Vernon's truck. The old man curses him under his breath. Later on the dock, Candy's father lifts up a lively lobster.
You're hungry, right?
Behind the dock, sunlight bathes the harbor's edge. At night, Homer, Candy, and her father crack the lobsters at a cozy table. Later, moonlight glows on a drive-in movie screen as Candy and Homer drive past.
What is that?
It's a drive-in movie theater.
Is it a movie outside?
Yeah.
Oh, can we see it?
Okay.
Tall pine trees frame the pale blue screen. Candy stops the convertible in front of it on the leaf-scattered grass.
It's closed now because of the blackout.
Oh. So big.
You smoke? Want a cigarette?
Okay.
Homer watches her face as she runs her tongue along the cigarette paper.
Well, it would kill me if you saw me doing this.
Homer looks serenely ahead. Candy lights the cigarette and hands it to him.
There you go.
Thanks.
He tilts his head back as he exhales.
So you like movies?
Yes. I've seen only one, though.
You've seen only one? Which one?
King Kong. It's really good.
Homer looks over and grins. Candy's eyes shine as they meet his. As Homer looks contentedly at his cigarette, Candy's smile grows thoughtful. Now at St. Cloud's, Dr. Larch bites into an apple and winces.
Oh. Wilbur, it's a pie apple. Here, look. See? Try one of those.
So he's an apple expert now, is he?
He takes a bite as Angela and Edna empty an apple crate.
Oh, my, yes. That's a far superior taste. And crisp, too. So many apples are disappointingly mealy.
Wilbur, he picked these for us himself.
You don't find it depressing that Homer Wells is picking apples? Or that he can't be bothered to write us a proper letter.
Wilbur, it's a gift.
I'll show him a gift. I'll send him a gift he can use.
He strides out. Now in a movie theater.
There goes Jimmy Stewart on his way to enlist.
one of the most popular stars on the screen. Today, he's Lieutenant Stewart, USA.
Homer sits engrossed, barely blinking. Candy slyly studies his face. She turns back with a private smile. In the newsreel, a B-24 bomber flies over countryside. Swallowing hard, Candy's soft face stiffens as bombs plummet earthward. You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. Later, posters advertise Wuthering Heights as Candy and Homer leave the theater.
But it looked like you liked it.
I did like it. All I said was, it's no King Kong. I mean, first she loved him, then she didn't, then no one else could have him.
No, but she did love him. How many women have you known?
And what did she die of exactly?
She was torn apart. She died of a broken heart.
Oh. Well, I need a better medical explanation. Torn apart. At least King Kong, you know, he knew what he wanted.
Daytime. Homer and the others pick apples.
Hey, what are you doing with that candy, Homer?
You're making history, I suppose.
You ain't getting in no trouble, I hope.
No trouble.
That candy? She the nicest girl I know. She's about the most beautiful girl I've ever seen, but I don't know if she the nicest.
Well, she's the nicest and most beautiful girl I've ever known.
See, that sound like you in trouble already, Homer. Mm-hmm.
Sound like big trouble to me, Homer.
I'm not in trouble.
Yeah, you is.
Uh-huh.
I know when people in trouble. You is.
A board meeting.
His name is Homer Wells, and his pathetic resume is the best I've seen. I find it hard to believe that the board would be interested in this character.
But he looks like an excellent young man. A first-rate candidate, don't you think?
He looks like a bleeding heart missionary moron to me, but that'd be the problem with any doctor interested in coming here.
Do you know him?
No, and I don't want to. He's doing missionary work in India. I wrote to him weeks ago. He's either too holy or too busy to answer.
Mary Agnes and Steerforth burst in wrestling. Edna and Angela shoot them glances.
Sorry.
The board members stare.
Okay, come on.
They leave.
I fail to see how someone courageous enough to make a commitment to a foreign mission is automatically to be dismissed. Well, that part of the world requires precisely the kind of dedication that is needed here.
Does it snow in Bombay? One winter here and we'll be shipping him south in a coffin.
But Dr. Larch, he seems exceptionally qualified.
I'm not talking about his medical qualifications. It's the Christian thing that bothers me. I just don't see it as being of much use around here.
I fail to see how a little Christianity could hurt anyone here.
Anyway, I was just showing you this guy as an example of what's available. I didn't think you'd be interested.
We're very interested.
Oh, yes, very.
You wouldn't be opposed to meeting with him?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to meet him. What's his name again?
Dr. Homer Wells.
It's a nice name. Very New England.
Very Maine. A very local sounding name.
Very.
The nurses nod, politely smiling. Later, Dr. Larch and Angela dance.
Told you. If I appear to hate it, they just gotta have it.
He dips her.
Excuse me, I just want to ask you something.
Edna, come dance with me. Let's be foolish tonight. Come on.
He holds her waist.
Does he know he's supposed to be in India? Does he even want to come back?
He's a field hand. What could possibly hold him there?
At the orchard, Homer talks to Candy in the rain.
Homer! It's time to go!
Candy smiles as Homer waves goodbye. As she drives off, he follows into the cider house. In the pressing room, Jack smokes as he stirs a vat of cider.
Things.
What about worms? Don't the drops have worms?
Well, yeah, they got worms, Homer. They ain't nothing but protein, man.
Jack tosses his cigarette into the vat. Mr. Rose freezes.
Jack
keeps stirring.
What the hell is you doing, man? You know that cigarette's gonna ruin this whole batch of cider? You know I can't have that. You're gonna have to get that out of here. You're gonna have to go fishing, boy.
You mean swimming?
Swimming, fishing, whatever you want to call it.
I ain't going in that vat to fish out no cigarette.
Jack stares sullenly into the vat.
Hey, Jack. Come on down here, man.
Jack sighs. Mr. Rose walks away, his jaw set. Jack's gaze follows him. As he gets down from the vat, the others stare and follow. Mr. Rose waits by the open barn doors just out of the rain. As the two men face each other in their wet yellow slickers, Jack's eyes widen.
What business are you in, Jack?
Jack swallows.
Just tell me what business you're in.
Just say you're in the apple business, Jack, because that's the only business you want to be in.
Suddenly, Jack lunges at Mr. Rose with a knife. The two men face off in the rain.
Hey, listen, Jack, you want to go in the knife business with Mr. Rose, man?
As Jack lashes out, Mr. Rose strikes back. Jack gapes at his slashed open raincoat as Mr. Rose stands knife ready.
Now, I'm in the knife business, Jack. I'm in the knife business.
Let me tell you, you don't want to be in no kind of knife business with me. Now, I think it's time for you to go fishing.
He leaves Jack in the rain.
You kind of fast, ain't it, Jack? Well, the good news is, you already have undressed for swimming.
Later, Rose stitches her father's palm.
You really showed him, huh? You just about cut your hand off. And all you cut off him was his clothes.
And you know and I know you don't go to nobody's jail for cutting a guy's clothes off. Ain't that right? Boo-boo, ain't that right?
Oh.
Ain't that right, Homer? Easy, okay.
Rose yanks the thread.
Ah!
Daytime. Candy teaches Homer how to drive.
Not too much gas. Okay, there you go. You want to go right in here. Okay. Slow on the gas. Really have to be careful. That's the one. We want to stay right there.
He backs into place at the drive-in.
Slowly. Okay.
Candy grabs a speaker.
Pilot, you're a natural. You were born to drive a car like this.
You think so?
Yeah. So this is a speaker. This is where the sound for the movie comes out.
Oh, I love this place. This is, have you seen a lot of movies here?
Yes, no. I mean, when you come here, you don't really care about the movie.
Homer's brow arches.
You don't care about the movie?
What are you so crazy about movies for?
That was my favorite night at the orphanage, movie night. We'd all race into the dining hall, and of course everyone wanted to sit in front, so we'd be packed in so tight you could feel the kid next to you breathing.
You don't miss it?
I miss things. I miss people. I miss reading to the boys.
Candy smiles to herself.
It's so much responsibility, huh?
I didn't ask for any responsibility.
Just a little privacy. Well, you're in luck. Let me show you, because privacy is what drive-in movies are all about. So, scrunch down like this.
She slides down in her seat.
Come on, scrunch down. All the way. And then, give me your arm. Your arm around me.
She lays her head on his shoulder.
You just cuddle and hug and, you know, you don't really watch the movie.
I would watch the movie.
The drive-in screen fades to a grainy black and white film. King Kong clutches a beautiful woman in his giant hand. As the film reel slowly spins, Fuzzy watches from inside his breathing tent. He glances at Dr. Larch, who sits beside him in the empty infirmary. Fuzzy grins as the monster gorilla touches the struggling woman, then sniffs his fingers. The film breaks.
Sorry, Fuzzy. It's Homer's splice again.
Fuzzy's eyes are closed. Dr. Larch stands and shuts off the projector. He glances toward Fuzzy's bed.
Fuzzy?
He peers through the plastic of Fuzzy's still face.
Fuzz?
Daytime.
If the little ones want to know what happened, tell them that Fuzzy was adopted.
Buster shovels dirt onto a grave.
Okay.
So, what happened to Fuzzy?
He was adopted.
Kneeling in the small cemetery, Dr. Larch presses grass around an 8-inch-tall gravestone marked FS.
Would they believe that, you think?
They'll believe it because they want to believe it.
Shouldn't we tell Homer?
If Homer wanted to know what was happening here, he could pick up a telephone and call us.
At bedtime.
I think it was a nurse or a nanny who adopted Fuzzy. Someone who could take care of him. Because they had a better breathing machine than the one that Dr. Larch built for him. So, I think we should be happy for Fuzzy, okay?
Little Curly nods.
He found a family. Good night, Fuzzy.
Outside the door, Dr. Larch tearfully stifles a sob. At the orchard, Mrs. Worthington carries a package to the picker's lunch table.
Good morning, Miss Worthington.
Look, there's mail for you, Homer.
Oh, thank you.
Rose, I brought those clothes for you. Come on, let's go see if they fit.
Rose jumps up from the table.
What's that?
Homer shakes a carpet bag-sized package, then sets it on the ground.
Oh, ain't you gonna open it, Homer?
No.
Mind your business now, Peaches.
Sorry about that, Homer.
It's okay.
Nighttime. Moonlight falls across Homer's face as he lies awake in bed. Glancing around, he reaches under his cot, pulls out the package, and unwraps the top, revealing a bag handle. He opens the hinge closure, looks in, then tucks the still-wrapped package under his cot and lies down. Now, Homer and Candy stroll along a beach. Candy jumps on his back.
Okay.
With Candy riding piggyback, Homer bends over and she grabs something out of the sand. Candy jumps off and holds the object up in the hazy sunlight.
It's glass. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful?
She studies the chunk of sea glass.
Give me your hand.
Homer touches the rounded edge.
Feel that?
Mm-hmm. He smiles at Candy as she fingers the glass.
The ocean rubs it against the sand, so it gets that smooth. It takes a year for it to get like that, though.
She throws the sea glass into the calm surf. Homer jogs after it. As he bends to fish the glass from the wet sand, Candy splashes him, then sprints away up the beach. Stuffing the sea glass into his pocket, Homer takes off after her. He closes in as she scrambles up a wooded embankment. Catching her from behind, he wraps his arms tightly around her, his face pressed into her blonde curls. Candy's smile fades. Unlocking Homer's hands from around her chest, she turns. Taking his face in her hands, Candy kisses him tenderly. As Homer's lips grope, she opens her mouth and they kiss feverishly. Candy grips the back of Homer's head. Locked together, they lower themselves down on the grassy hillside. Lying on top of her, Homer struggles with her red cardigan sweater. Homer reaches down and helps her unbuckle his belt. Arching her head back, Candy shudders as Homer moves on top of her. She clings tightly to his back as he lies still between her bare legs. Later, they trudge up the embankment.
He volunteered. Nobody volunteers for the Burma Run. He said so himself. He just leaves me here. What does he want? He wants me to just wait for him? He knows me. He knows I'm not good at being alone.
Homer climbs behind the wheel of the convertible.
This was right. I know this was right.
Right?
Yeah.
This was right.
Later on the dock.
Well, just tell me. Do you want me to stay? Do you want me to go?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think we should just wait and see.
Okay.
Later at the cider house, the pickers load into a flatbed truck.
Are we all set? The
Mr. Rose shakes Mrs. Worthington's hand.
Goodbye, Arthur. Thank you again for all your hard work.
My pleasure, ma'am.
Have a safe trip,
Rose.
God bless.
Tell Candy.
Take care of yourself, huh?
Okay, you too.
We'll see you next year.
Okay.
Homer, bye, everyone. See you later.
Bye.
Don't freeze to death, Homer.
Don't get yourself in no trouble, Homer.
Don't freeze to death if you want to, Homer.
Shut up, Jack.
All right.
Homer waves to the men as they pull away from the bunkhouse. Later, the wood plank door to the bunkhouse slowly swings open and Candy enters. Lying on his cot, Homer looks up from a book.
So you're saying?
He puts the book down and sits up.
Olive told me. You know, you could have told me yourself.
I'm just waiting and seeing. Like you said.
Candy grins slowly, dropping her gaze to the floor. Taking a seat beside Homer on the small, sagging mattress, she meets his gentle stare, and he glances away. She lays her head on his shoulder. Now, seated on the cider house roof, Homer begins a letter on a writing tablet. Later, he pulls up a lobster trap with Candy and her father. Seasons pass.
Dear Dr. Larch, thank you for your doctor's bag, although it seems that I will not have the occasion to use it, barring some emergency, of course. I'm not a doctor. With all due respect to your profession, I'm enjoying my life here. I'm enjoying being a lobsterman and an orchardman. In fact, I've never enjoyed myself as much. The truth is, I want to stay here. I believe I'm being of some use.
Now Candy lies nude, face down on a cot.
I've looked at so many women. Never felt a thing, you know. I've seen everything. Just felt nothing.
Candy gives him a sleepy smile.
With you, it...
He places his hand on his bare chest.
If I look at you, it hurts.
Homer's lips spread in a wide smile.
Come here.
He lies beside her on the two pushed-together bunkhouse cots, burying his face in her neck. Later, they ride in the convertible.
My dear Homer, I thought you were over your adolescence. The first time in our lives when we imagine we have something terrible to hide from those who love us.
In the winter, Mrs. Worthington gives Homer more blankets.
Do you think it's not obvious to us what's happened to you? You've fallen in love, haven't you?
Candy hides as he opens the door.
By the way, whatever you're up to can't be too good for your heart. Then again, it's the sort of condition that could be made worse by worrying about it. So don't worry about it.
At Christmas time, Homer visits with Candy and her dad.
Dear Dr. Larch, what I'm learning here may not be as important as what I learned from you, but everything is new to me. Yesterday, I learned how to poison mice. Field mice girdle an apple tree. Pine mice kill the roots. You use poison oats and poison corn. I know what you have to do. You have to play God. Well, killing mice is as close as I want to come to playing God.
Homer, here in St. Cloud's, I have been given the opportunity of playing God or leaving practically everything up to chance. Men and women of conscience should seize those moments when it's possible to play God. There won't be many. Do I interfere when absolutely helpless women tell me they simply can't have an abortion? That they simply must go through with having another and yet another orphan? I do not. I do not even recommend. I just give them what they want.
Summer. In the bunkhouse, the yellowed rules page floats off the wall. Homer puts them back up.
You are my work of art, Homer. Everything else has been just a job. I don't know if you've got a work of art in you, but I know what your job is. You're a doctor.
I'm not a doctor.
You're going to replace me, Homer. The Board of Trustees is looking for my replacement.
I can't replace you. I'm sorry.
Sorry? I'm not sorry. Not for anything I've done. I'm not even sorry that I love you.
Seated atop the cider house roof, Homer folds Dr. Larch's letter. A tear rolls down his cheek. Now at St. Cloud's, Nurse Angela joins Dr. Larch.
I think we may have lost him today.
In the empty bunkhouse, Homer corners Candy.
Come on. Come on, just read it later. Come on.
Okay.
Prying a book from Candy's fingers, Homer grabs a pillow off one of the cots and chases her. Candy snatches another one and tosses it at him. As she hunkers down, Homer charges and they flop onto two cots pushed together. Unbuttoning their shirts, they look up.
Who is it?
I don't know.
Jumping off, Homer heads toward the window. Outside, the picker's truck pulls up.
It's Mr. Rose.
Candy crawls off the cots and she and Homer yank them apart.
Hey!
Hero enters, giving Candy a reticent glance as she tucks in her shirt.
Hey, Homer.
Hero, how you doing?
Good. Who's Candy?
Hey, Homer.
Good to see you again.
Thanks.
Welcome back. Hey, buddy.
The rest of the pickers file into the warmly lit bunkhouse.
You ain't free to ask.
Yeah, it's fine.
Hey, Miss Rose.
Peaches, how are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Mr. Rose glances around.
You sure?
Candy.
Mr. Rose, welcome back.
Thank you. Hey, only this place feels just like home.
Nice in the home.
What y'all been doing make it feel so nice?
Huh. Hey, Rose.
Rose. Good to see you again. How are you?
Where's Jack?
Muddy arches his brow.
Yeah, just wasn't up for the trip this season.
Near a corner cot, Mr. Rose removes his jacket.
Yeah, I didn't know what his business was. Is that right, Muddy?
At the end of the room, Rose draws a curtain. Now in the orchard, sunlight filters through the low leafy branches of the apple trees. Wearing his picking bucket, Homer climbs a ladder and begins eagerly plucking apples. Pausing, he notices Rose on a nearby ladder, her face buried in the crook of her arm. He keeps loading his bucket. Later, beneath a gray morning sky, Hero blows out a stream of cigarette smoke, then joins Peaches and Homer at the outdoor breakfast table. Nearby, Rose sits on a crate facing the river, her elbows planted on her knees. Homer glances back over his shoulder toward her, then stares thoughtfully down at the table. Rose, standing abruptly, wraps her sweater around her stomach and strides briskly away.
Ain't you gonna eat with us, Rose?
Muddy takes a seat at the table.
She used to eat with us.
Maybe she ain't hungry this morning.
She ain't hungry every morning because she's sick every morning.
Homer stares in Rose's direction, then follows her into the bunkhouse. In a curtained-off alcove, Rose sits on her bed, bent over her knees.
Rose, how many months are you?
She gapes at his gentle face.
Do you know?
Rose blots her eyes with her sleeve.
Do you know, Rose?
What do you know about it?
Well, I know more than I'd like to know about it.
Well, then don't show yourself not at home. It's your business.
Rose slowly lies down.
Right?
Homer looks at her small framed, clothed in baggy overalls. She clasps her thin hands together.
What am I going to do with a baby? Yeah, baby. What am I going to do with a baby? Huh?
Whatever you want to do, Rose. I can help.
Rose curls up on her side.
I just mean that if you don't want to keep the baby, I know a place where you can go.
You think Daddy's gonna let me go anywhere? Huh? I ain't going nowhere.
She turns her back.
Why don't you just, go back to your picking home? I can take care of it by myself. All right?
What do you mean?
I mean I can take care of it by myself. Okay.
Don't do anything, Rose. You don't do anything to yourself, okay? Rose? You hear me? Rose, do you hear me?
Go on.
He leaves her there, curled up on the thin mattress. Later on the dock, Homer sits on a crate while Candy packs lobster traps.
I think we should take her to St. Cloud's and let her decide when she gets there.
I told her she doesn't feel she can do that.
Well, we have to help her, right?
She stacks up the traps.
We need to do something, don't we?
Candy stares urgently at him.
Homer.
His brooding eyes stare at the dock. At the orchard, Rose sets the outdoor table for a meal. Candy strolls up wearing blue jeans and a work shirt.
Hey.
Hey.
I have some more clothes for you. I keep forgetting to bring them with me.
I'll need a little clothes. Thanks. She walks around the table, setting a bowl and a cup in front of each chair.
I know what's going on, Rose. Homer told me. You don't know this, but I got pregnant about a year ago.
Rose stops. Her eyes roll wearily up to the sky and she takes a breath.
Do you want to have this baby?
Rose shakes her head.
No. Who's the father? Does he know? Rose, if you don't want to have this baby, Homer and I will take you to a place. It's safe. He knows this.
I can't go nowhere. With downcast eyes, Rose shrugs.
Rose, listen to me.
Candy pulls her close.
You can tell me.
As Candy embraces her, Rose collapses into sobs.
It's okay.
Her father comes out of the bunkhouse.
Morning.
Morning, Mr. Rose.
He continues past them with hesitant steps.
Boo, I'm gonna be up top, okay?
As Mr. Rose starts up the hill to the orchard, his daughter pulls back from Candy's embrace. Meeting her friend's eyes, she jerks her head toward her father. Rose's gaunt face solemnly nods. Later, Candy runs through the orchard rows. She stumbles toward a tree and clings to its trunk.
Mr. Rose.
Homer looks down from his ladder.
What?
Mr. Rose is our baby's father. Her baby. Mr. Rose is the father.
What? Are you sure?
I can't believe this.
As Homer climbs down, Muddy and Hero eavesdrop nearby.
What is she gonna do? God, I can't believe it. We have to keep her away from that bastard.
She hurries off. Looking over his shoulder, Homer blows out a thin breath. He strides cautiously toward a ladder.
Mr. Rose?
Homer. I know you ain't ready for lunch, boy.
Is it, true?
What's that?
Are you sleeping with your own daughter?
Mr. Rose's toothy grin fades. On the ground, Homer shifts his feet. He looks at the grass. Mr. Rose steps down the ladder and stands before the wide-eyed young man. Homer swallows, his chest heaving.
I think you've been staying up too late at night, Homer.
He turns away and Homer follows. Squatting, Mr. Rose empties his apple bucket into a crate.
You're having sex with your own daughter.
Ain't nobody having sex with my daughter. Let me just tell you that.
You're lying. Aren't you ashamed of yourself?
Mr. Rose stands, head and shoulders above Homer.
What do you care who hears? I mean, come on, they know already, don't they? They know, Mr. Rose.
And you know what your business is, boy! I know you don't want to be no kind of business with me. That's what I know.
Yeah? Well, go on, cut my clothes. I've got other clothes.
You're gonna come here talking to me about lies and shame? When those people took you in, and that boy Wally is away at war?
Yeah, well, she's your daughter!
And I left her!
His eyes flash wildly.
I ain't never gonna do nothing to harm her.
Homer locks his cold gaze on Mr. Rose, who climbs back up his ladder.
She's pregnant, you know that? She's pregnant.
Homer walks off, weighed down by his bucket harness. On the ladder, Mr. Rose reels in a daze. He drags his hand across his mouth.
Later, Mr. Rose walks with heavy steps back toward the bunkhouse where Rose and the picker sit around the outdoor table. Slowly taking his seat at the head, he stares down at his bowl. Rose blows on her spoon and sips her soup. Homer and the pickers avoid each other's eyes. Nighttime. In bed, Homer lies awake in the dark. Resting his head on his bent arm, he blinks his heavy-lidded eyes. In the morning, Homer picks apples.
No! No!
From his ladder perch, he sees Candy run toward a Jeep parked in front of the house.
He was over Burma when he was shot down. There were no injuries from the crash, just the disease.
In the house, Homer joins Candy, Mrs. Worthington, and an Army major.
The radio man jumped close together. The co-pilot jumped third, all on Captain Worthington's orders. The captain was still flying the plane. None of the men on the ground could see the sky. That's how thick the jungle was. They never saw the plane crash. They never heard it crash. They never saw Captain Worthington's parachute either.
He was missing for 20 days. Why?
He followed the Irrawaddy River all the way to Rangoon. He managed to avoid the Japs, but not the mosquitoes.
So it's malaria?
It's encephalitis B.
What's that?
Captain Worthington is paralyzed. From the waist down, he won't walk.
As Mrs. Worthington fights back her tears, Candy walks out past Homer. Now at the docks, Candy hugs her father. Homer stands by stacked crates and zips up his jacket. Later, he joins Candy on a floating dock where they sit together on a crate.
Just tell me, I'll do whatever you want to do.
Nothing.
Isn't that like waiting and seeing?
No. Nothing's nothing.
Homer sits with his hands folded on his lap.
I want Wally to come home. I'm afraid to see him, too.
Homer puts his arm around her.
Oh, don't do that, Homer.
He draws it away and stares out to sea.
I just want to sit here and do nothing.
They sit surrounded by the choppy water.
To do nothing. It's a great idea, really. Maybe if I just wait and see long enough, I won't have to do anything or decide anything, you know? I mean, maybe if I'm lucky enough, someone else will decide and choose and do things for me.
What are you talking about?
But then again, maybe I won't be that lucky. And it's not my fault. It's not your fault. And that's just it. Someone's gonna get hurt, and it's no one's fault.
Talk about this.
If we just sit here and we wait and see a little while longer, then maybe you won't have to choose, and I won't have to do anything.
What do you want from me, Homer? Wally's been shot down. He's paralyzed. What do you want me to do?
Nothing. I'm sorry. You're not the one who has to do anything.
The wind stirs Candy's blonde hair. Homer stares inland. After dark, Homer walks back toward the bunkhouse and sees Rose trying to leave on a bicycle.
Where you going? Where you think you're going?
I got to go, Daddy. You have to let me
go. Wait, Rose. Just wait. Just wait. Now, I ain't gonna let you go nowhere in the middle of the night, now, gal.
I just can't stay here no more, Daddy.
Hey, nothing, man. You just going in the house. This ain't none of your concern.
Just listen to
me. You are forgetting yourself. Now, this is my daughter.
He clutches Rose.
Now, I believe you got your own mess you got to deal with.
Homer.
Ain't that right, Homer? Ain't that right, Homer? Now, my daughter done told you and I done told you. This ain't your business. This ain't none of your business. You even know what your business is, Homer? Do you? Come on, man. What is your business?
I'm in the doctor business. I can help. That's all I'm saying. I can help.
Inside the bunkhouse, Homer takes the leather doctor's bag from under his cot.
Later, he sterilizes instruments in a basin of steaming water. Wearing rubber gloves and a mask tied around his neck, Homer sets up a surgical tray. Mr. Rose stands outside the curtained alcove, looking in.
She's my little girl, Homer.
She's gonna be all right, Mr. Rose. Nothing to worry about.
Lamplight throws Homer's shadow against the thin, patterned curtain. He pushes it aside.
You ready, Rose?
Rose draws herself up straight and sighs.
Fellas.
The pickers turn their heads.
Come on, yeah.
Muddy opens the screen door to the pouring rain and the men leave. Light falls on Mr. Rose's face, outlining his hard forehead and profile.
I'm staying home.
Okay. If you stay, make yourself a use.
Mr. Rose blinks under Homer's calm, even gaze. Holding up his gloved hands, Homer returns to the alcove. Rose lies on her back with her knees bent over two wooden chairs. Homer sits between them. A work light shines over his shoulder. Mr. Rose holds a gauze ether mask over his daughter's face and drips the liquid anesthesia onto the cloth. Outside, the pickers smoke under a firewood shelter. Back inside, Homer eyes Mr. Rose over his patient's knees.
Watch her breathing.
Mr. Rose's face mask contracts as he sucks in air. He slumps back against the wall. Sweat streams down his face as he stares across at Homer's face.
You better go get some air.
Mr. Rose runs out into the drenching rain. He staggers around in a puddle. Panting, he stomps the ground and punches the air. With his hands on his knees, he heaves up, then lashes out at the darkness. Morning.
It's not heavy. It's
not. On the other side of the curtain, Homer listens in. Thin streaks of daylight shine through the bunkhouse walls. Candy gives Homer a somber glance as she walks past him to the kitchen. In the main room, Mr. Rose lies on his cot, fully clothed, with his arms wrapped around a pillow. His fierce brown eyes stare fixed ahead. The pickers come in out of the rain, their oilskin slickers dripping. Muddy looks down at Mr. Rose.
Step Vernon. Keep asking where you, Rose Rose, and home is at.
Well, that Vernon mind his own business, Muddy.
Told him y'all sick.
You tell him whatever you want. You crew boss today.
The men sit on their cots and take off their boots. Mr. Rose exhales heavily through his nose. Outside Rose's alcove, Homer gazes at something on the wall, then chuckles.
You reading a Rose, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What on?
He focuses on the posted list.
Please don't smoke in bed.
You already heard them in Homer.
2, please don't operate the grinder or press if you've been drinking. 3, please don't go up to the roof to eat your lunch.
Oh, now that's the best place to eat lunch.
4, please, even if you are very hot, do not go up to the roof to sleep.
What do they think, go up to the roof to sleep? They must think we're crazy.
They think we dumb niggas, so we need some dumb rules, is what they think.
This is the last one. There should be no going up on the roof at night.
Now, why don't they just say, don't go up on the roof?
That's it.
That's it?
That don't mean nothing at all. And all this time I've been wondering about it.
They're outrageous, them rules.
Mr. Rose scowls.
Who live in this side of the house?
He stands up abruptly.
You're grinding up those apples. Person that side of cleaning up all this mess.
He trudges toward Homer.
We just plain live here, just breathing in that vinegar.
Raising his arm, he points at the rules.
Well, someone who don't live here made those rules. These rules ain't for us. We the ones supposed to make our own rules. And we do. Every single day. Ain't that right, Homer?
That's right.
Mr. Rose's gaze drifts away from Homer's.
Well, why don't you burn them rules in the stove?
Go ahead, Homer, do it.
Homer stares evenly at Mr. Rose. The brawny crew boss jerks his head in a tight nod. Homer takes down the rules and strides across the floor. In her cot, Rose turns her head, listening. As he lifts the stove's cast iron lid, Homer wads the type list, then throws it in. The thin paper burns. Nighttime. At the drive-in, Candy sits behind the wheel of the convertible with Homer beside her.
Nothing is nothing, right?
You know I love you. You know I do.
You needed me. Now Wally's gonna need you. At least there's no more waiting and seeing. At least I got to see the ocean.
Candy looks away from Homer, misty-eyed. A glistening tear falls from her chin. Morning. Muddy paces on the cider house roof.
Homer! Rose's been running away.
Took off in the middle of the night.
She left on the bicycle, man.
Muddy and Homer jog toward the bunkhouse. Stepping just inside, they stop short.
Nobody gonna find her. She long gone.
Mr. Rose lies in bed.
I didn't try to stop her. I just want to touch her hand before she go. And that's all I want to do.
Blood soaks the sheets.
That's all. I swear. Where'd she get that knife, Muddy? It looked like your knife. No gal need to be out here trying to hitchhike unless she got a good, strong knife to hold on to.
Where'd she get you?
Homer peels back Mr. Rose's shirt.
Just misunderstood me. See, I was trying to give her my knife, and I reach out my hand to touch her.
Lizzie.
I understand, Homer. If she don't see it like that, it's my fault. She go with that knife. Fast. She a lot better with that knife than you is, Muddy. Who you supposed to order?
You taught her, I suppose.
That's right. That's right.
It's more than one cut.
That's because I take my knife and stick it in the wound. Yeah, I stick my own knife in there. I poked it all around, Homer. Trying to find the same spot that she got. Now, look here. When you tell the police how this happened, I want you to tell it like this, here. My daughter ran off. I was so sad about that. I stabbed myself. I was so unhappy that she left. That I killed my own self. And that's the truth. Ain't that right? Come on. You say that. I'm so unhappy that my daughter ran off. That I killed my own self. Ain't that right, Homer?
That's right.
Homer?
Yeah, that's what happened. You lost your only daughter, so as you killed yourself. That's what we say.
That's right. That's the truth. I'm just trying to put things straight.
Gazing tensely at Mr. Rose, Homer gives him a slight nod. Mr. Rose nods back. His face slackens, his stare drains of life, and fixes on Homer. Homer swallows hard, his lip trembling as he pulls a blanket over Mr. Rose's wound. With a steadying breath, he reaches out and gently sweeps closed the dead man's eyes. Muddy looks away. Later, Peaches, Hero, and Muddy sit on the cider house roof, their cigarette smoke drifting into the sunlit air. Across the yard by the bunkhouse, two men load a covered stretcher into a hearse. Now, Peaches and Muddy stack labeled crates of apples onto a truck bed. Nearby, Homer loads empty picking crates onto another truck. Candy slowly approaches, nervously fingering an envelope.
So you think Rose will be okay?
She'll be all right. She knows how to take care of herself.
Turning the envelope over, Candy steps toward Homer and holds it out.
This is for you. Olive wanted me to bring it.
Oh, thanks.
Slipping it into the pocket of his pea coat, Homer goes back to stacking crates.
I know you don't think much of being needed, or of me for that matter, but
I'm sorry for what I said about Wally needing you. It was unnecessary.
She steps beside him.
You had every right to be angry.
No, you warned me. You told me you weren't any good at being alone.
Leaning back on the crates beside Homer, Candy stares off. Homer glances at her.
Wally's gonna be okay. I know he is.
She nods.
Yeah.
Homer shifts his gaze toward the ground and a smile slowly forms on his lips. He glances up at Candy. With a lingering gaze, she reaches out and strokes his cheek, her lips trembling. She turns and walks away. Now in the bunkhouse, Homer pulls the envelope out of his coat pocket. Sitting on his cot, he tears it open.
Dear Homer, I am writing you to tell you about Dr. Larch.
Back at St. Cloud's, Dr. Larch lies in bed beside a sunny window. His eyes closed, he holds his ether mask over his nose and the vial in his right hand. As he turns slowly toward the window, the mask wedges against the sill. His bottle hand slips. Glass shards and watery ether spill over the windowsill. Beneath his trembling palm, pinkish blood mixes with the ether that flows into his trap mask. Out in the empty hallway, Buster carries an armload of wood. Pausing, he turns around, heads into the exam room, and approaches Dr. Larch's bed.
Dr. Larch?
He drops the wood and rushes out. He returns behind Nurse Angela. She gently rolls Dr. Larch toward her, taking his hand from the broken glass. Quickly, she draws the curtain and opens the window. Sunlight bathes the pillow as Angela tucks her arm under his head, then nervously lays her fingers on his wrist. Removing her hand, she caresses his face.
I can assure you that the overdose was entirely accidental.
In the bunkhouse, Homer's face shines with tears. He folds the letter and lays it beside him on the cot. Rising slowly, he goes to the window.
Let us be happy for Dr. Larch. Dr. Larch has found a family. Good night, Dr. Larch.
Good night, Dr. Larch.
Daytime. Homer loads his suitcase on the back of a truck, then climbs aboard with Peaches and Hero. The truck pulls away from the bunkhouse.
Come on, Mother, step on it, man.
Get on it.
Get on it, man. I'm wanting to get to the sunshine.
Homer.
Yeah.
You ever seen a palm tree?
He ain't never been out of Maine.
Ain't you sick of pine trees, Homer?
Let me tell you something about Florida, Homer.
The sunshine.
They pass the main driveway, and Homer catches sight of Wally's homecoming. As an officer and Candy's dad carry him to a wheelchair, Wally's limp body slips heavily between them. Tears shine in Homer's eyes as Candy glances up. Her sad gaze lingers on Homer, then she bends down, smiling into Wally's face. They kiss. Homer smiles gently.
Homer? Hey, what you think, Homer?
I'd love to go with you guys, but I have to move on.
Hey, you hear that, buddy?
What?
Boy said he ain't moving on with us.
Homer.
Come on, Homer, come on down with us. I reckon you gotta do what you gotta do.
Later, Homer rides a train. The orphans attend Dr. Larch's burial, then kneel by their beds.
O Lord, support us all the day long, until the shadows lengthen and the evening comes, and the busy world is hushed and the fever of life is over, and our work is done. Then in thy mercy grant us a safe lodging and a holy rest, and peace at the last.
On the train, Homer sleeps. In St. Cloud's, the station master waits as Homer steps off the train into the sunlight. For a moment, Homer stands gazing back, clutching his doctor's bag and small suitcase. Then he turns and walks along the tracks. The train pulls out of the station in a trail of steam as its trickling water meets the snow-dusted ground. On the horizon, pale brown trees soften the high hill where the manor house is visible. Homer walks steadily, his figure dark against the snow. Ahead, the red brick orphanage stretches across his path. On the orphanage's long rail porch, Edna passes a jack-o'-lantern down to Buster, who takes it with mittened hands. He turns, and his eyes widen.
Homer?
A smile spreads across Homer's face.
Homer!
Angela and Edna gape, then follow the children into the yard, running. In the upstairs bathroom, Mary Agnes watches Buster trip in the snow and land at Homer's feet. The kids leap onto him and knock him down. Nurse Angela kisses his cheek. Mary Agnes runs to the bathroom sink where she straightens her hair and pinches her lean cheeks. She dashes out to the main staircase, then calmly composes herself and steps down a few stairs. Homer comes in, surrounded by kids.
Let me see.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
He catches Mary Agnes's gaze and she smiles. In the boys' attic dorm, Curly roots through Homer's suitcase.
Homer's.
Buster sits on the bed.
You have something for me?
Do I have something for you? You know what? I have something. I do, here.
The piece of sea glass.
It's from the ocean. It's for you. What do you think?
Good.
I made a room up for you.
We thought that would be more comfortable.
Oh, thank you. That would be great.
Curly holds Homer's chest x-ray up to the light.
I don't know.
Nurse Edna takes it from him and passes it to Angela.
Do you have Homer? Do you have something else for me?
Homer, do you know what this is?
Oh, that's my heart.
No, actually, it's Fuzzy's. There's nothing wrong with your heart. Dr. Larch wanted to keep you out of the war. That's why he told you it was yours. I think he was worried about his own heart. He said it would never stand up to Homer Wells going off to war.
Homer smiles wistfully. Later, in Dr. Larch's old office, Homer reads his forged diploma hanging on the wall. He steps up to the wide wooden desk. Taking a seat, he rests his elbows on the chair arms and looks around.
Thus I began my new life, in a new name, and with everything new about me.
At story time.
I felt like one in a dream. The remembrance of my old life is fraught with so much want of hope. Whether it lasted for a year or more or less, I do not know. I only know that it was, and ceased to be. And there I leave it.
He closes the book.
Is that all?
No, there's much more to come, Curly. Well, that's tomorrow. Let's not give the story away.
Taking the book with him, Homer crosses the long, narrow room. Stopping by the door, he turns off the lights.
Good night, you princes of Maine. You kings of New England.
The kids grin in the dark as they burrow into their blankets. Buster tucks his sheet under his chin and smiles to himself. Fade to black.